Hi, everybody. It is the December 23rd, 2020 Platinum and A to Z call. I'm really glad to see you guys. Everybody was able to squeak in a little bit of time before the holiday if you celebrate. The way we handle the calls, if this is the first time you're on, and if it is, welcome. It's kind of first come, first serve. So jump in, don't be shy. If two of you want to talk at the same time, we'll negotiate it, but I don't want you to hang up the phone thinking, gosh, I really wish I had asked a question. Or worse yet for me, you send an email to me afterwards and say, well, I just was too afraid to ask my question. So don't be shy, jump in. We're a friendly crew here, and they're really aren't any stupid questions. I know we say that, you know, from the time kids go to school, there aren't any stupid questions. But the thing that I really believe on breeding is if you have the question, there is someone else who also has that question. This is a pretty complicated, crazy activity that we're involved in. So please don't think that you're the only one that doesn't understand or know how to do something. I do have some announcements. The January webinar, which is just being announced now, is going to be on lactation. Title is, of course, milk. But we're going to talk about the mystery of lactation and sort of how the process works, and then how we should or should not be managing it. Because frankly, I think we try to overmanage this process. There are certainly times we need to get involved, but much of the time things are going normally and we interfere with them, and that can cause problems for both, primarily for our bitches, less so for our puppies. So that, I actually don't know the date of that. It's something like the 20th, but we'll be putting it out on the 1st of January. So you'll get your notification and just be ready for that. I see we have a question in the chat. Kelly. Kelly has Cavalier on day 56. Pup saw 5 to 6 pups on x-ray today. Congratulations. Vet gave me doxepram for weak pups. Instructions say sublingual or via umbilical vein. Thoughts? Sublingual. Kelly, if you want to unmute, I see you there. Let me see if I can unmute you. I can. There you are.
Hey. Hi, I'm
Hey, how are you?
Good, good.
Congratulations on the successful breeding. So I've only used it sublingual. I don't know if anybody else has done it through the umbilical vein. Maybe Renee, or I'm looking to see what other vet techs we might have on board. But Kelly, it's usually just a drop under the tongue is usually adequate. Renee, have you ever used it through the umbilical vein?
I didn't catch what drug she said she had.
Doxepram.
I've not used that one, but we have switched to using most of our emergency rescue drugs through the umbilical vein.
Is it injected?
Yep. You look for the big blue thing and you try to stick your little tiny needle in it and hope for the good.
I think I'll go under the tongue. No offense.
The reason we stopped injecting into under the tongue or injecting into the puppy is that we've had some abscesses, some sterile, and we were concerned. My go-to was sticking it under the tongue, but my concern was if I paralyzed, hit a nerve, or did that, I could potentially be in a lot more trouble. So dropping it under the tongue is great. I'm not sure that I would be comfortable injecting under the tongue at this point.
Yeah, I've always just dropped it. And Kelly, this is usually for very weak puppies. Now, you can certainly do it for a puppy that's just not thriving, but I would try everything else first. But if you have a very weak puppy, there is a saying in the dog breeding community that says you can't kill a dead puppy. And so, you know, when it looks like that puppy is on its way out, then it really just do whatever you can do. I've done mouth to mouth. I've done, I highly recommend the needle, the acupuncture needle, which is in the course in labor and whelping. Just do whatever you need to do and hopefully the puppy will make it, but we can lose them so quickly that it's just not the time to be shy or casual, but hopefully you won't need it. I mean, it's not common that we do need it. It certainly isn't, gosh, for me, it's been like one in every 10 litters. So good luck.
Okay, thank you so much. The more I learn, the more I seem to get.
True. Renee, go ahead.
My other concern is with Dopram is that the reason it works is because it drives the brain to require more oxygen. So you can actually put yourself in a deficit pretty quickly. So rule of thumb is puppy needs to be out for several minutes, 10, 15 minutes before you reach for that in most cases. When you have a basically dead puppy is when most of us are using it now, using lots of other things in place of it because of the deficit that it's going to put your puppy in.
So Kelly, did you understand that don't do this, don't use it right after a puppy is born, give the puppy some time, go through scrubbing with a towel, use your Delea catheter, keep its head, you know, 45 degrees down so as much as draining out as possible, and use it once the puppy has had the opportunity to breathe for quite a while. But of course, if the puppy is really fading fast or apparently faded, so with stillborn puppies, you know, often we just throw everything we have at hand at them in hopes that something might stimulate the puppy.
Okay,
good advice.
Good
luck. Let us know how it goes.
All right, thanks.
Marilyn says, can the webinars be on a day other than Wednesday or Thursday, my only standard work days? I'll ask Nicole. Nicole does all the scheduling, and I have no idea why she puts them on her Wednesday or Thursday. I do have to tell you, I hate Mondays, but I'll ask her. We had somebody in Fit for Life say that, and we moved them off of Thursdays for the same reason, so I apologize if they're consistently there. My guess is, I'm sort of thinking through my schedule, Tuesday's meeting day. So it probably is either Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. And one thing we have found is Fridays are not very well attended. A lot of people don't show up. So I will share that with Nicole. We'll try and move it around a little more. Mary, I got your note on deworming. Happy to discuss. Do you want to... hang on a second. I'm looking at Terry's because it's sort of along the same lines. Terry, I see your note. Idea that they get a full dose of Panacure C granules at 6 weeks. Not many of us use the granules at 6 weeks. This ties into what Mary's about to ask about. But it is pretty difficult to get the granules down. And that's why the vast majority of us use the liquid safeguard, because that's pretty easy to make sure they get most of it in. You know, sometimes you've got to clean their mouths, but much easier than the granules. But you can mix the granules in a small amount of food, a small amount of yogurt. Cat food is great. You can do any of those things. Okay, Mary, challenge. Jeez, oh Pete, those puppies are going to be wormed every day of their lives. So go ahead, Mary, explain.
Well, we have one of the beautiful things living close to a wildlife area. We have coccidia and giardia. And so when you go through, anyone who's gone through the deworming protocol for puppies knows that there's one for, you know, awesome, we're just doing standard, we don't have any nasty stuff. And then there's one for coccidia and there's one for giardia. Now we do both. And last time when I sent our puppies home, I got it. I mean, I felt like I was deworming every day. And
I think you're going to be.
And I mean, we get like... Yeah, 1 week was the tortrazeral week, which Tim calls torture us all. And then the next week was pinbendazole for 5 days, and then back to the other and back and forth. And then the puppies went home And then I was talking to an owner who said, yeah, I'll be getting potty training down as soon as he stops with his, you know, adjustment diarrhea. And I'm like, he's been home for a week. What do you mean adjustment diarrhea? Tell me about this diarrhea. And this puppy was just exploding. What does it smell like? And I know they had just finished the finbendazole and we were at just the right time to be hit with coccidia again. And she was trying to get her puppy in under COVID to be seen for the diarrhea. And I shipped her Tultrazurl and told her to talk to her vet about it, which she did. And the vet said, great, use it. Puppy cleared up. And, but then, you know, I'm looking at this and I know I need to be preemptive on both of them. And just trying to see if we have any established protocol like we do for coccidia by itself or giardia by itself. And then I think it was Danette who talked about sending puppies home with the coccidia treatment where they did one and then they left and finished two doses at home. I didn't find it back in the chat, but I wanted to explore that so that I have a better outline, because we've got two litters coming a week apart. And yeah,
you're just going to be worming.
I'm just going to be worming all the time. And
yeah. So I was thinking about it. I appreciate you sending your question in ahead of time, because it's not something I want to speak off the top of my head to. But I don't think there is an established protocol for this. So I think this is something we have to think through and make up and test. So as I was thinking through it, for me, the top priority off the bat is gonna be Tultrazurl to get the coccidia before it takes hold, because the giardia takes a little longer for it to take hold in the puppies. So I would say start with the 2 weeks, at 2 weeks with the Tult for the coccidia. And then I would shoot for, unfortunately, I think a 4 week fenbendazole, and that's 5 days for the giardia.
Right.
Yep. So that's 4 weeks, 5 weeks Tult, 6 weeks fenben. You might not need a 7 week Tult because they're not going home.
Right.
So okay. I'm
popping with stress, right?
Exactly. So I would do the 6 week fenben, the 8 week fenben, and I would absolutely do Danette's protocol of sending them home with Tultrazurl, which I think is a greater risk of them carrying home. Right. There's a much better chance you're actually going to get the giardia than you are the coccidia. Right.
And that was, when the puppy popped with diarrhea after going home last spring, and it was, I overnighted the Tult to her. And so, which even though it was in California, it wound up being $65 or something to get it down to her. But you know, I knew that unless she had a positive fecal, her vet wasn't going to give her anything. And I told her to talk to her vet, you know, talk to your vet. We're not doing this kind of on the side here. But he was really on board with continuing with that. And the puppy did clear up right away. But the timing was that it was 2 weeks after my last treatment. And so I think they were just prone to pop with it. And
you know, if they hadn't gone under stress, they stayed at your place, which might have been a little stressful for some of you. But if they had just stayed, exactly,
yeah,
they might not have popped, because, you know, we know that coccidia is this race between the bug and the maturing immune system. And if we can get the immune system mature enough, then it's going to be able to handle the coccidia.
Okay.
But that going home, it doesn't matter how much we prepare them. It doesn't matter how stable and courageous they are. It's stressful to go
and he was
home.
the last puppy to go home, spent the night, and everyone else had gone home the day before. So he already had a lot of changes and a lot of stress happening. And so, I think what I will do after nomograph comes back, and I will start with backing up from when they go home and try to be sure that that 2 week point is that they are with me at that time. And I'll post it, what I've come up with. And we're going to need a big board. Keep everybody.
Yeah. Especially with two litters.
Yeah.
And I think I would absolutely treat the day before, you know, they're probably not going to be stressed there. And then send them 2 days home, and I might send them with a little bit more in case they needed to treat again.
Well,
because it's so hard. The vets can't give it to them. If you're not familiar with Tol-Trazurol.
Yeah, the vets can't get it to them. And unless they get a positive fecal, you know, which they check a little tiny bit out of that sample, unless they, you know, get a positive result, they're not going to treat with anything. And so, you know, and you talk to any vet about it and, you know, they'll all tell you an accurate fecal, the only accurate fecal is a positive fecal. And
And we know Albon, you know, which is probably what they are going to treat with, it's just not as good as Tol-Trazurol. But for those of you who aren't familiar and haven't had the wonderful opportunity of having coccidia on your property, one, don't eagerly await it and try and avoid it if you can. But it is it's not even an off-label use of Tol-Trazurol in the United States. It is, you can use it in Canada. It's been used in Europe for decades at this point for coccidia, but for some reason in the United States, it still isn't approved. So vets can't prescribe it, but we can get it over the counter, oddly enough, as bizarre as that is. So if you have coccidia, I highly recommend you use it because it certainly has been the most effective the treatment that I've seen. Now, Renee had a question. She sounds like she does the same thing. Renee, you can unmute. You try and get coccidia under control first. And she's asking, Mary, when your pups break with Giardia.
Well, what I noticed was that I was still, that 3 days of the Finbin wasn't really cutting it. And so I got the microscope out and started looking and did find some of the little Giardia faces in there. And so I knew I had Giardia. And so that would have been at the 5-6 weeks right in there. They were older. They weren't as young as the puppies, but it definitely, looking at the fecal, and I'd encourage everyone who's got a microscope to do that. Just, you know, it's not that difficult to do. You could.
We have a class on it. In fact, yeah. We have a little easy short class on it.
And that was how, you know, and then it made sense why we just weren't getting a lot of traction with just 3 days of the finbendazole. And so, you know, and every critter and their brother comes through our yard. We corner up two sides to a wildlife area. And, you know, we try to keep, I have a camera on the puppy pen at night so that I know if a raccoon or skunk has been in there and stuff like that. But it is, and the puppies aren't out at night. I didn't mean for that to sound that way. I just want to know if something's come through and I'm going to be sending my puppies out, you know, on the ground. But
if you ever take them out, Mary, you know, if you're out walking them.
Yeah. Well, if I got a critter in there, I just want to look for poo and get it cleaned up. So.
Renee, what schedule do you use?
I've done much like her. I've kind of backed up from when they go home. I have coccidia, but lucky that I don't have it too terrible. So I'm usually able to, if I get rid of it at 2 weeks, I generally don't have to have a concern. But what I have started doing is I'll do a full 7 days of panicure, for the Giardia right before they go. My goal is to give them their last dose as they're walking out my door. And that seems to hold them through the transition period. Has worked really well for me, and extending it to 7 days is something that we've started doing in our area at our clinics because even 5 isn't cutting it for Giardia anymore with us.
It's a very wily bug. So Mary, that's an idea. So Renee, would you do, but you don't have to do Tolt at the end because you've resolved the coccidia.
In my guys, I've done, I also use Panazuril, but because I can get it, and I've had really good luck with that. I do that right at 2 weeks. We set the timer. It doesn't matter whether you show it or not once I've had it. And I will actually deworm with a little different than you guys do. I do Panazuril, and then I follow up that up with a few days later, I'll do my first dose of Nymex, and then I'm rotating between Panicure and the yellow stuff, Nymex. I'll rotate back and forth every other week with that to try to.
So you're doing fenbendazole and parental pamoate. That's interesting.
Because,
so you're because using.
I have horrible rounds that are very hard. So I'm trying to get the rounds, and then my Giardia doesn't show up in my puppies till they're older. Much like she was saying, I'm not seeing Giardia till my guys till they're six to 8 weeks. So I can hold off on that. So I'll do 3 days of Fenben in the beginning, but that last one I do for a full 7, aiming for their last dose to be given as they're leaving.
I'm putting, somebody asked what drug you're using. She's using Panicure, but that's, is in Panicure and Safeguard. So those have the same active ingredient. And then the other, other is Nemex, which is parental pamoate. And all those are both for roundworms, and fenbendazole is effective on Giardia. Both of those are in the deworming protocols. They're just, I use that active ingredient so you can get what is available to you, what drug is available to you. A lot of us use Safeguard for goats, which sounds very odd that we would be giving our dogs goat medicine, but it is the same percentage of active ingredients as we use in dogs, and it's less expensive. And you can get it in bulk if you have a large litter and you need to treat them for 7 days and you have bloodhounds. It's a fair amount of worming medication. You are going to be using a fair amount. So those are the two options. So Robin, Renee's, I'll let her speak again, but Renee is using fenbendazole for the 7 days for Giardia. And luckily, most of us don't end up with Giardia on our property, but once you have it, you tend to have it for quite a while, especially if you have any water on your property, standing water. But it can come if your property is just moist. And coccidia is the other pathogen, parasite that puppies break with under stress, and it causes that horrible stinky diarrhea. If you get it really young in your puppies, it can be fatal. It's a unpleasant bug. And unfortunately, once you have coccidia on your property, you're probably keeping it for a really long time. So it's one of the reasons that I recommend that you don't have, if you can, you know, if it's not your job to have training dogs and things like that, don't have a lot of dogs in your puppy area, even when you don't have puppies, because once they've brought coccidia, or it will stick around for a really long time. It's like parvo. It's hard to get rid of. Cool. That was fun with worming meds. Mary, let us know what you decide to do. Be interested, and how it works. More importantly, how it works. So what you do and how it works. Okay, guys. Who's up next? No questions? Just unmute.
It helps to unmute. This is Terry Hagel.
Hi, Terry. How are you?
Good. How about a normal puppy question?
Hey, go either, for
it. You want me to chat or?
No, go ahead. Oh.
Okay, so they're going to be 6 weeks on Friday.
Yeah.
They're cute as can be.
Yeah.
In the background right here. We started weaning them and we looked at the food calculator and they can't fit. They can fit about half of that amount of food into their little bellies. Is that kind of normal?
Yeah, it is. So that's the food calculator is the maximum we should be feeding them a day.
Oh, okay.
And maximum. Yep. And, you know, some pups pick, some pups gorge. It's really hard to predict. It's very hard to say how much we should feed puppies, but that's kind of the maximum. If you find that, you know, say it's 3 pounds of food a day and they're eating two, then just make two. You know, it's not like you have to stick with that. It's not like you have to convince them to eat it. It's just best to not go above it. Although I suspect with border collies, they're not going to become pigs. Bigger issue with Goldens, Labradors, and some of the other breeds that will eat themselves silly.
Sure. Yeah, they're like 5 to almost 7 pounds, and they're gaining about 2 to 4 ounces a day.
Oh, that's great. That's terrific. So, okay. So were you making like 2.5 pounds a day?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're eating.
They're about half that. Okay. We added, we warmed it up. We added a little bit of another food. Grandma Lucy's, which has a little more aroma to it. They seem to like that.
Great, and they're still nursing.
And they're still nursing. And that was another related question is, you know, it's the first time we've done this. Do we just let nature take its course? And
Yep. Okay. Absolutely. Is she still going into the pen?
She is. Right now she's in the crate inside the pen. The puppy crate. She's starting to do a little bite inhibition work.
Uh-huh. Great.
She's pretty good about it. So
A lot of times at 6 weeks, bitches won't go in the pen. I'm so done with it. But they will nurse if the puppies are outside the pen. So they're not gonna volunteer to go into the torture chamber. But if they can play with the puppies and move around and jump on the couch and things like that, then they're game to continue to interact. And the bite inhibition and all the social interactions are important if we can help them do it. But she'll naturally start the process of limiting how much they can nurse, and she'll just run out of milk faster. I mean, it's pretty amazing how fast a litter of 6 and 7 week old puppies can empty a bitch. You know, what 6 weeks prior, it took them 23 hours to empty her, and it takes 2 minutes at 6 weeks of age. I mean, it's a fast process. Now, often a bitch will let them continue to nurse because it releases hormones for her and they enjoy it, but there's not a lot of milk happening after that.
Okay.
But the only other thing I would say, can you even get them outside though? You probably can. Can you?
Oh, at 40 degrees today, except it's raining and now it's snowing. Oh, horrible. We had them out once. Yes, last week. We've had them out to the basement. We've been out to Cabela's. We got to get over to the Home Depot. Outdoors is.
I know, yeah. Outdoors is rough for you. I was going to say you could. I will often use nursing as the reward for coming to an area that's a challenge for them, or going on a woods walk when we start in the first thing in the morning. They don't get to nurse before they go out. I want to see them move out on that woods walk, follow us well, and then they get to nurse, you know, like 90 seconds into the walk. So you can also think about using nursing to develop them. You know, if you can get them into a equine center or something, use nursing for coming down the aisle way or coming across the arena, anything that will make them work for this amazing reward, because it's the reward. You know, there's nothing we have that comes close to being able to nurse. So as you think about what you can do, and I know the weather has not been very conducive, that's an option as well. So they're not just getting to nurse, they're working to nurse.
Okay, yep, great.
Good luck, send pictures. Haven't seen them on Facebook.
Oh, I know, I've got my other group, but yeah, I should.
Oh, just give us one or two, yeah.
Yeah, will do.
That's great. Terrific. Quiet today. Okay, well, then I have to brag a little and show my ribbon. I just got it yesterday from the AKC. So for those of you who didn't see my brag, it's Breeder of the Year this year now for obedience. And remarkably to me, that's the fourth time we've won in 5 years. First time for rally, second time for tracking, third time for agility, and this year for obedience, which I never dreamed I would get obedience because obviously it's a highly competitive sport. For those of people who say, how do you get it? I can tell you it's kind of like the Pope. I have no idea. The AKC calls you and says you won and that's it. There's no standard criteria. There's nothing. I don't have any idea how they figure it out. It has something to do about the dogs you've produced. But so I'm just incredibly honored, and I want to use it not just because it's a cool thing, but because it's I think, a way to understand how long it can take to reach your goals in a breeding program. So 40 years ago, I set the goal that I wanted to produce multi-purpose golden retrievers. And, you know, how do you figure out whether you do that? There are no more dual champion golden retrievers. There will never be another dual champion golden retriever in the history of the breed. So how do you begin to measure those things? And you don't have to have that as your goal. I don't want you to think I'm saying everybody needs to produce competition dogs or something like that. Absolutely not. But you want to have that measurement of how do I know I'm producing, I'm reaching my goal. And then 5 years ago, I got the first call from the AKC. Now, I will tell you, they called and then they said, we want to interview you. And I said, great. And they're like, so how do you like rally? I have literally never been in the rally ring in my life. I have never done a rally course. I have never done a rally class. I didn't feel like that was really appropriate to be telling them after, you know, I just won this award. So I'm tap dancing about how I've been to the Rally National. I have been to the Rally National to cheer my dogs on, you know, my owners on, but I really don't know a lot about the sport. And so it was a pretty funny conversation. But it also says, you know, I've never put an otch on a dog, but my owners have. And above all, I've picked good dogs for those people. And so if you think of anything as you put the exclamation point on your litter, it's matching those dogs to the right people in the right homes. It's not just people who want to go out and do X. It's that person wants that kind of puppy, because the people that I've had that have gotten, let's just use obedience trial champions, Otches, for an example, I have had the most intense, driven trainers who train 4 hours a day and, you know, their lives are obedience. I've had one of those. And then the vast majority of them work full time and love obedience, but it's not their lives. And so how do you find a dog that can fit all of those people. And as Robin just put in, I think it's the APED. I really think the APED, if we use it carefully and practice it and try and learn about it and use the APED forum, it can go a long way to helping you match. Now I'll go back for a second to Renee's question, why no dual champion golden retrievers? Because the only two sports a golden retriever would compete in to get a dual champion, it must be a breed champion, it must be a field champion, not an amateur field champion, a field champion. Both of those rings, both of those competitions have moved so far apart and have pushed us to develop such extreme golden retrievers. We have very few FC golden retrievers each year. They are typically Labradors. So it is a Labrador, it is a sport designed around the Labrador retriever. And the golden retriever is a different dog. Golden retrievers are upland game dogs who have incredible noses, and unfortunately field trials do not encourage a dog to use its nose. Don't have any upland tests at all. So there's no quartering, there's no flushing. It's just really, really long marks. I was talking to one of us. I'm looking to see, no, not on, that her young dog did a 550 yard mark the other day. So that's saw a bird thrown at 550 yards. Well, I can pretty much tell you, I can promise you I couldn't hit anything at 550 yards. And two, I couldn't see it. You know, I couldn't see a bird thrown at 550 yards. So it's become an interesting sport. But because of that, if a dog is substantial enough in the golden retriever ring, has enough coat for the golden retriever ring, it's not going to be competitive in field trials. So it's kind of the tragedy of our sport. Because we used to have some lovely dual champions, but there won't be one in my lifetime. And I believe it's the AKC, but it might be the GRCA, has decided that you have to have an all breed win. So you have to have a win and 10 points, I believe, to get your FC. And it has to be an all breed win. So you have to beat all the Labradors. As opposed to pointers, where you can use a specialty win. So for example, my dog that brought home that blue ribbon beat 103 dogs at the national specialty, but that didn't count. And so you have to, it's a distortion. Anyway, we have great dogs anyway, so. That's my little news, and I love my owners and I'm so proud of what they've done. And they make me look very good. Robin is asking about puppy college. Is there a supply list? Yes, there is a supply list, Robin. And I think that by Monday we will have three of the lessons published. They're done, but they just haven't been finalized. And on them is, what do you get before getting your puppy? What do you do before you're getting your puppy? So there's a lot. It'll be a little easier to find. Renee, you're near the Breeder Hall of Fame. Awesome. Just notified your owners that you're super close and you're asking how you can help them. Good. So what do you guys have to do to get Breeder Hall of Fame?
It's a point system based on titles that dogs you've produced have gotten. You have to have a certain number of breed champions and a certain number of trailing titles, and then whatever else goes in. Problem is, our club doesn't accept all titles, so we have to go down the list and search for it. So I notified everybody that we can only get in once. Luckily with the co-breeding program, we can get in twice, because once under her name, once under my name. And I sent a letter to everyone and said, okay, here's our 2021 goals. I want to be in, because the 2022 nationals, I'll be there to accept it. I said, who's sending me dogs, or who's getting titles so I can help?
That's awesome, Renee. I have been known to have the same conversation with my owners and then reach out privately and be like, you know, if he gets a CDX, it'll be the last point you need for your VCX. And I'm always honored by how much people respond to that. They love that. So many people do. So let us know if you make it. Janice, how far along is Parks? Parks is on day 16 today, and her ultrasound is January 8th. Implantation should be starting today. So I decided to try something new this time, and I actually switched her food now so that if she develops morning sickness, she's going to be sick of another food that I don't really care about. And we'll see how that works. She gobbled it down this morning, and I haven't seen any indication that she's having any problems. And for those of you gum people, I have decided to try the gum check again. And I took a picture of her gums when I bred her. And we'll see, because I looked at them today and they're identical to what they were when I bred her. But if you haven't heard of this, this is it's actually not an old breeder's tale. It's a new breeder's tale that your bitch's gums will turn very pale if she's pregnant right around day 20 and day 21, right around implantation. I've tried it in the past. It has not worked for me. And I think the reason that I am suspect is because bitches lose puppies after day 21. You know, it's not like, oh, pregnant at day 21 means you're going to have a litter. And so I think that where it falls down is that it's just not far enough along when resorption is pretty easy. So anyway, I promise you, I will let you guys know. And I hate to wish morning sickness on her, but I probably wouldn't mind if she had a little, just saying. Okay, Megan, not sure Mike's going to work. Addison's disease. Oh, that's a bummer. Love some advice. She's new to breeding and bought a two-year-old tested and champion standard poodle. She's had two large litters, but her last litter going home 2 months ago. Last week, she was diagnosed with Addison's. I'm sorry, Megan. Held back two puppies from her and sold one to another program. Is there a way to safely breed these dogs, or should they be fixed? Advice on telling puppy buyers. I've been doing the research, but it's overwhelming. Any advice would be appreciated. So I'm sorry, Megan, it is a really common disease in standard poodles. It's actually the primary reason that the genetic diversity study at University of California, Davis was started, to try and find, to try and understand why diseases like Addison's were cropping up. And it's been one of the benefits of better bred. I don't know if you're in better bred, you are great. Well, Natalie and Rebecca would be great resources, and both of them are also in Avidog. So you could reach out to them through the Avidog group. That's certainly a possibility. I can't tell you that I'm super knowledgeable about Addison's. Let's talk first about talking to your puppy owners. So I think these are the hard discussions or the hard emails we have to send. But in most cases, your buyers are simply going to be super appreciative and just super appreciative. So what do we need to tell our buyers when we get a diagnosis like this on a parent? The most important thing I think we need to tell them is what they should be looking for in their dogs in case their dog becomes affected. So if I was having a conversation, say about Addison's with my owners, it would be, oh, I've got some really bad news. I'm so sorry to share this, but I want to be really honest with you. Sammy was diagnosed with Addison's disease. We don't know a lot about the genetics of this disease, but I want you to be prepared. And then I would lay out for them the symptoms that they should be looking for, the age that they should be looking for those symptoms. And then just a little bit about treatments, but basically saying, you know, I want you to reach out to me. If this happens, I'm happy to answer any questions, et cetera. And Megan, it is perfectly fine to say, I'm no expert on this disease. You know, I'm not an expert. I'm just learning about it because of this dog's diagnosis. But, you know, it's like I won't say it's likely your dogs are at risk, although sometimes, depending upon the disease, it's very likely. But I don't think that's the case in Addison's. But I would say it's possible your dog is at risk. You should be looking for these things. And that's, I won't say that's it. You don't close the door at that point, but that's, you don't have to go on and on and on. A lot of times we're berating ourselves when in reality, the owners just want to know, you know, they want to know. And you can say, nobody else in the litter has been diagnosed. And I tend to do birthday updates where I update on the parents and I update on litter mates. So you can say, I'll let you know in the future if anybody gets diagnosed, because that is important in diseases like that. So I think with your owners, that's what I would recommend. I'm assuming you don't have it covered in your warranty, so you're simply not going to mention that. If you choose to support people financially, you can certainly do that. But if you didn't put it in the warranty, then you aren't obligated to do it. Now, for breeding the offspring, I'm not an Addison's expert, but I had one dog that I gave Addison's to, treating Cushing's, she was overdosed unintentionally and ended up with Addison's. It's a hard disease. It would be a hard enough disease that I would take the dog out of my breeding program and I would take their kids out of my breeding program. But I'm saying that, Megan, in a breed where Addison's is incredibly uncommon. Now, in a breed where it's really common and standard poodles may have enough of it that's the problem, then I do know that they are seeing less Addison's in the dogs with very low genetic diversity. Hence why they started the UC Davis study. Hence why they started Better Bred. I don't know if I would breed the offspring of an affected. I know I would not breed the affected. I don't know. Barb, do you know, have you followed that at all in your Better Bred adventures? No, don't know. Yeah. I hate to say it, but most of us tend to focus on the diseases we face ourselves. So I don't know if that's helpful, Megan. You've contacted UC Davis. Great. Did you send in DNA? Yeah, it is hard to find lines without it. We have an eye disease that's that way, and obviously cancer. All your dogs have done genetic diversity. Terrific. And they're in Better Bred so that you can look for those low COI breedings, the 10s or whatever. Well, if you're not in Better, yeah, you are. Okay, great. So Megan, the other thing, and I think, did you say, so the one thing I'll say for everybody is that barring a dire emergency, like dogs are going to die in the next week if they don't have this information, I will often take 3 to 4 weeks before I send that email out. And I'm doing that. I think that we have to kind of respect ourselves and our own disappointment and our own emotions and kind of deal with our own dog. And so I know when I've had to pull really wonderful dogs out of my breeding program, I've grieved it. I mean, it's just hard and you feel badly. So I'll usually give myself a little time to grieve. And I mean a little time. I don't mean 4 years. I've seen people just take forever to share the news, but I usually give myself a month. I mean, I wouldn't be doing it right before the holidays. It just, you know, it's not necessary because chances are those puppies aren't old enough. You know, I, from my understanding, Addison's is a 2-year-old disease. So anyway, there's no harm in giving yourself a little time to grieve and not doing it in a really emotional state. I will say I had a wonderful bitch diagnosed with the horrible eye disease that golden retrievers have. And I sent certified letters to everyone. It was that important to me to make sure that every owner, I didn't want to just send an email, and because I didn't know they were going to get them. So I sent certified letters to all of the owners of her kids to make sure everybody had the news. And it made it important enough to them. They needed to go get eye exams done on their dogs, and it made it important enough to them that they were going to go get eye exams done, and they all did. And amazingly, she never threw it.
And I too would reach out to Natalie and Rebecca in that little chat box on Better Bred. You know, it doesn't matter which one you're going to talk to. They converse back and forth with one another, but they're both in poodles. I mean, I would say they would be the go-to person, you know, as opposed to BGL right now, you know.
I agree. In getting information about Addison's, totally agree. Yep. Yeah, and they have the tools that you can use, which VGL doesn't have. They just run the test. Basically, VGL is the lab, and Better Bred does the interpretation.
And don't be afraid to ask them for their, you know, their ideas and thoughts about a particular pairing or whatever. They're more than, that's what they're there for, is to help you think through the process. Because, you know, sometimes it gets a little sketchy as to, is this what I want? Or is this better than that? You know, there's all sorts of things in that program. So, you know, use that chat box, even though it says they may be out, they'll get back to you.
Yeah, I would definitely do that. And luckily, both of them are in poodles. And so you're going to get possibly the most accurate information that I know of in figuring that stuff out. So, Megan, listen to them, not me, about your breeding steps, because I just don't know the genetics in standard poodles that much. Colleen's asking about the 550-yard marking dog. Yeah, don't you want to know if he pinned it, Colleen? I don't feel comfortable sharing it since it was just sent to me on a phone call, but lovely. In a Labrador, not a golden retriever, unfortunately. Labrador. Golden retriever would probably look at you and go, how'd you hit that thing? You're not that good a shot. Tara says, is there any way to delay ovulation in a bitch already in her heat cycle? No. Except possibly stress, and you probably don't want to do that. Waiting on semen from Europe, she went into heat 2 months early. Isn't that always the way? She went in this Monday. So she went in on the 21st. Semen should be shipped the 28th. I would think you're okay. Unless she's skyrocketed up, Tara, do you want to unmute?
Yeah, I'm here.
So hey, she came in the 21st?
Yes, my male puppy, who's 14 months old, let me know 2 days in advance that she was likely coming in. But my first sign, and she wasn't even swollen like she has been in the past, but first, just like the tiniest bit of discharge on a white Kleenex on Monday. And I've talked with the vet, and of course, COVID is causing all sorts of issues, but they've agreed to let me come in on Monday the 28th because of Christmas, and they're feeling like they don't want to rush progesterone because the dog isn't even being collected until Monday. So we're going in for first progesterone and brucellosis testing on Monday.
Yeah, I think you're, will his stuff arrive Tuesday? Yeah, maybe.
They're concerned it could be up to 4 or 5 days because of the holidays.
Oh,
but,
ow.
Yeah, but it's the RepRovet in Red Deer, Alberta works very well with I guess, all other Repro vets. So we're hoping this can get shipped out that same day. And I've asked for it to be frozen in case we don't make this cycle, because it's a lot of money.
Yeah. No, I think that's wise. You know, so when we're doing frozens, we're looking for that LH plus 6 day, and it's incredibly rare that that happens prior to day 14. And it's most often later than that. So barring the semen, you know, going to Honolulu or, you know, something like that, and assuming that she's being sort of normal, we all know that doesn't happen very often, but that she's following a normal pattern, then I think your timing actually should be okay. You know, it might be a little hectic towards the end. And yes, girls can, you know, move more quickly, et cetera. But can you do cytology?
Yes, I just got my microscope.
Yay!
And I learned how to make my own stains because I can't get stains right now. So I found how to make my own stains.
Great. And
I'll be starting that. I just need to pick up the sterile swabs when I'm out later today for another vet appointment for my other dog. So.
Terrific. Yeah, I think that will help you perhaps stay a little calmer along the way, because you'll have some insights. You're not going to be able to get progesterone, so you'll have some insights in watching the cell progression. Hopefully there won't be a lot of cell progression early on, and you'll have plenty of time to get the semen here. But back to your original question, there's no way to stop ovulation.
I'm doing everything I can to make her feel like the grand diva that she is. So.
Perfect. Yeah, stress can stop ovulation or cause them to not ovulate, but we don't want to do that. So, okay, I'll keep my fingers crossed that she's a nice, slow heat on this one.
Thank you.
Good luck. Erin says her girl's gums get redder due to increased blood flow. I think that makes a lot more sense, but I will post the pictures and you'll see my little experiment here. Kimberly says, how much playing with my girl's 14-month-old puppy can she do when she's pregnant? Do they need to be kept separated? Kimberly, is this male puppy? I'm looking to see if I can see you. You can unmute if you want. Kimberly, are you there? Maybe you can't. Female. So rough play doesn't need to be stopped at all, assuming that they, you know, do some rocking. Does not need to be stopped until the third trimester. Or if she has a huge litter, you might see it's partway through the second trimester. And you're going to notice because she's going to be pretty big. But if she isn't pretty big, then you can absolutely let them play and let them enjoy each other. Third trimester, so that's going to be after day 42, you want to cut it back and not let them really rock and roll.
Okay, because they play so, you know, they race around outside. They make little, you know, tracks through the bushes and
yep,
all that. So super. Thank you.
I want to go back for a second. What Renee was saying to Megan, which I think is important, is to on the kids that you kept, I don't know if they're bitches or dogs, but to wait and not breed them sooner. So certainly not at 2. And if it's a male, I would consider collecting and waiting. I have boys, I have sons from the my affected bitch that I collected, and I'm banking that we're going to get a genetic test. And so I'll be able to use the semen someday. So that's really good advice. Laura says lower genetic diversity is related to lower incidence of Addison's. Yeah, I believe that's the Standard Poodle paper that started the entire program that UC Davis. It's not it's not as definitive as we would like, but it is significant. Megan says her Addison Girls numbers were weird. I think. Oh, your genetic diversity numbers were weird. Not at risk, but not diverse, so sort of middle of the breed. Yeah, you know, there's not going to be a direct correlation between anything other than a DNA test and a disease. When we're trying to bracket to find these diseases, there's a lot of guessing, and there's a lot of dogs that shouldn't be affected that are and aren't affected that we would think should be. So we have to recognize these are, you know, when you have DNA tests, you expect all testing to be that accurate. And unfortunately, it's just not the case. Samantha, I had a litter last year out of my 13-inch beagle bitch that required a C-section. Puppies were 16 to 18 ounces. Samantha, holy cow, a poor girl. I've been told my diet during gestation could have caused their size. I'm planning to breed her again and would like to try to avoid these C-section monster-sized puppies. I think that's a good idea. Is there a chance it was nutrition-related and you fed her propound puppy and bone in raw? Yes, Samantha, I don't know if you want to unmute, but yes, nutrition, not so much what you feed it, but how much you feed can definitely affect puppy size. In fact, it's been a conversation we've had quite a few times because I would say when we started Avadog about 8 years ago, I was pushing 300% nutrition in the third trimester. And we've backed that off because we were getting puppies that were too big. And now I'm at 250%, maximum is 250%. So some of it, Samantha, is how many puppies. I'm looking to see if you're still here. There you are. Can you talk to me? Are you there?
Yeah, I don't know if I can. Okay, perfect. Yeah. She had five puppies.
Five puppies. So that would be an average litter. So you don't want to go up much. I mean, you're going to go up maybe 50 to 100% with an average size litter. If you go more than that, you're overfeeding and you're going to get bigger puppies. So do you know how much over maintenance you were feeding? You know, so you have her maintenance nutrition. She gets 3/4 of a cup in the morning, in the afternoon or something like that. And then you have her reproductive nutrition. Do you know what her maintenance was?
I would have said I probably went 150 to 200, I'm thinking, because again, that was kind of what was talked to me, but I don't have a mentor in my breed, but I do have people I talk to in various other breeds and they're sporting breeds. So it is a little bit different compared to, you know, a smaller hound.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially a 13 incher. So, and do you know how many puppies you're going to breed her again. So
yes, going to breed her.
Yep. What would be really important to me is to get a good ultrasound.
Okay.
And or get a Doppler. Because you're going to need to make the decision on how much to increase at about day 42. You know, because going into the second, we don't increase at all in the first trimester. We increase a little in the second trimester, but most of the increase takes place in the third trimester. And if you don't know how many puppies they have, you're winging it. You're just guessing at that point. So getting that accurate count, if it's possible. Now you need a vet, you know, who can assist you with the accuracy of that count. But if you have that, that will be really, really beneficial. Proplan puppies, fine. Although you can just do Proplan 30-20, all life stages. You don't need to go to puppy. And the raw that you feed should be another AFCO all life stages food. Okay. So you should be only feeding her AFCO all life stages or puppy foods while she's pregnant, because the challenge with raw is it can offset the calcium phosphorus ratio unless right, it's been,
So I do think that my problem with her was I did, because it was my first litter, and I think I overdid everything. I think I fed her too much in the previous trimesters, because coming into the third trimester, all I really did, I had it increase, but I did do more feedings because she filled up quicker because she was the size of a house. So I think what I'll do is I'll just keep it more up to the third for sure after day 42.
Yeah. And go through A to Z and you'll see there's a nutrition handout that talks about the amount and what's really important, especially for small breeds, is that you're looking at what your average litter size, small litter size and large litter size, and you're basing how much you're feeding on that. Because those poor little guys, you know, your puppies aren't that much smaller than my puppies. And my dog probably is three times your dog's weight.
Exactly.
And it's kind of amazing that those puppies aren't that much smaller when you think of the size an Irish Wolfhound has versus the size, maybe not a Chihuahua, because those are usually 2 or 3 ounces. But if you compare the size of the parents to the size of the puppies, there is not the same difference. And so smaller bitches definitely are confounded as we're trying to feed them without overwhelming them.
Okay, that's great advice. Thank you. It was my veterinarian who's a lab breeder. She was very surprised when she had the C-section, because she's like, these are the size of my lab puppies. So,
see, I don't even have 16 to 18 ounce golden retrievers. Those are immense.
Thank you very much, Gail.
Huge. Good luck, Samantha. Jen says the male that had very poor semen evaluation, not good enough for freezing, had a natural breeding and the female's pregnant. Yay. First time breeders and breedings, male was put on Glycoflex, plan to go back and check his numbers again to see the difference and see if we can get a freeze. That's great news, Jen. Fabulous news. Excellent. You know, we still don't know why Glycoflex works, but it does. So that's great news. I'm thrilled for you and thrilled for them. Last call, guys. Going once, going twice. Have a very, very Merry Christmas. If you are a Christmas celebrator, regardless of whether you are, have a very happy new year, because we're all going to stand there and wave goodbye to 2020 with big grins on our faces this year. That is definitely a so long farewell. So have a wonderful holiday, and I'll see you on Facebook, obviously, and then plan to join us for the webinar on milk or lactation in January, and we'll kick things off then. Thanks, guys. Great to see you. Bye.